Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is David Pepper. He has emerged as a fantastic political thriller writer in the writing world over the last few years, and he is out with a brand new novel. This one is called A Simple Choice. It is available everywhere, and David has a political background. He's been elected to office. He was a party chairman in Ohio, and David, this book, it's different from your previous ones because it's a standalone, but as you sat down to write the story, there's a little bit at the end about how you came up with the story, but what I'm more interested in is the pacing of this book. It's a sprawling story that told in several different parts, but the pacing was such that I couldn't put it down, and I read it in about 2.5 hours.
Wow, that's great to hear. There's few nicer words for an author to hear than that. When you write a book, at least my goal is, and I think about it as I would read a book, I want it to be a page-turner. Even if it's complicated, even if there are a lot going on, if you don't write as a page-turner, you lose a lot of readers. So I try and keep my chapters crisp. I try and, keep the action moving. I have multiple points of view, which I think, at least in my books, keeps things going. So I'm glad to hear that you think it drove forward. That's really important, and if you're not careful, you could lose readers because people don't have that much time. They're reading a lot of books, and if it slows down too much, that could be the last time they pick up the book. So I love hearing that you thought that.
Well, just a little bit about the book. It starts off with the death of a United States senator, a suicide in Maine, and then kind of encompasses all across from the Midwest onto the Eastern Seaboard and down to Florida. But can you kind of just sum it up? Because I don't want to give too much away because it's just a fantastically plotted book.
Sure, it's hard. I have the same worry. So basically, the book, there's a core plot happening, but you don't really know what it is for a while. But you see the outlines of it, and the outlines of it are happening in multiple places. And so we have characters, and the opening scene is in a wonderful part of America. Some of your listeners may know it, called Pemaquid Point, Maine. And this is actually such an iconic site that if you look at the quarter. On the quarter of the state that has the state of Maine on, every state has a quarter, is the lighthouse, and it's Pemaquid Point. This is an iconic spot in Maine. And as you said, a senator, not to give away the first seven pages, but the senator, who was just a revered senator, steps off a cliff in Maine and kills himself. Then you've got a story in Ohio where this very impressive young woman has moved back home from being a Supreme Court clerk to help take care of her mother who's dying of cancer. Those are the two main storylines that are completely separate come together because there's something in common with those two very different stories. And as you say, the book ends up taking you from, Florida to Maine to Tennessee to Boston and all parts in between Ohio because it is a broader plot. But you only begin to see it through sort of the consequences of different places. And just not, you go back to the title, A Simple Choice. I mean, at the end of the day, the concept of the heart of the book is the simple question. If you, and this is the question that Amity Jones, my character in Ohio, faces, along with many others, including that senator, if you are given a chance to save a loved one who has, in this case, a deathly illness, a cancer, what are you willing to do to save them? What deal would you make? What line would you be willing to cross if you knew it would save their life? And that's a decision that many of these characters end up facing. And it ends up, and one of the questions is, what would the most powerful people in America do if faced with that choice? What would U.S. senators do if they were faced with a choice? You can save a loved one if you do the following. What are they willing to do? And that ends up being a sort of driving question in the book that all these characters face. And as it's sort of ironically titled, it turns out it's not a simple choice at all because it's fraught with consequences for all the characters.
What I thought was ironic when I read the book, and I know it won't seem ironic to you, but when I read your previous books and I knew that you had a background in politics, I think of a line from The Shawshank Redemption that, the system is easy when you know where the kinks in the system are and you know how to work around it. And then here, part of this book, I see that it's set in Mansfield, Ohio, and I get to reading, I thought, oh, that's kind of ironic, the Shawshank. Well, there's some nuggets in there about Shawshank, and you're an Ohio native, so
yeah.
How big is the Shawshank thing in Ohio? Because that's a movie that I think Americans universally love.
That is so funny. So Shawshank is enormous for me. It's my favorite movie. Every time I drive to Mansfield, almost, I will go look at the it's not called Shawshank, but I will look at the prison there, which is now an old, you know, retired prison, where Shawshank was filmed. Anyone who loved the movie would recognize it. It was a huge thing for the town of Mansfield that Shawshank was filmed there. And I know Shawshank buffs who literally go around the town to find, you know, they find the road that Red walks on at the end. There's one road where that happened. So it was a big deal. It's clearly now part of Mansfield's identity. But I happen to be a huge Shawshank. It's one of those movies where when it's on, I cannot help but watch it. And so, yeah, I do make some references to it. And more broadly, you know, Mansfield is a town that's kind of, like a lot of towns, it's struggling today in real life. It was an old manufacturing town. Now it's still a town with a major prison in it. It has the Shawshank, you know, story. And my main character is going back to Mansfield again to take care of her mother, and she's seeing a town that's struggling. And in my books, like you said, I try and capture what's happening in politics today. And so I really want to have people think about towns like Mansfield, because that's honestly the fate of towns like Mansfield is really shaping politics right now. Struggling places that are frustrated, who's going to appeal to them and how. So there's a lot of politics that get caught up in these towns that are struggling. But the Shawshank angle is definitely one of my favorite aspects of Mansfield.
There's another word that came, there are a couple words in the book that I'd never heard of, and I don't even know if they're real or not. There's an idea of deep fake technology, and there's something called a directed grant. Are either of those real things?
So deep fake is definitely real. Deep fake is, and it's, I hate to say it, like, this is where my past books have had this terrible habit of actually coming true, okay? So readers of my past books may know that. My first book was all about a Russian oligarch rigging an American election, et cetera, et cetera. In this book, I explore something called deep fake technology, which is the ability to, especially artificial intelligence, to create videos that look real but aren't. And I get into how dangerous that can be, not just in politics, where you all of a sudden you use fake videos to make, but that look totally real, to make a candidate look terrible or scandalous or drunk or you name it. And that can be done now, but I get into how you also, and this is going to happen, I predict it, you know, we'll talk later when it happens, countries could use deep fake technology to start wars. Or to justify attacks. And my worry is that Russia already does this to some degree. You put together videos and really impressive things that justify bad deeds or justify, you know, demonizing another country. So it's a very powerful tool that I'm afraid is going to be put to some pretty bad use. And I give examples of that in the book. It drives a lot of the early parts of the book. And again, that's my effort to sort of get into the real world of politics through a novel. But it's very much real. The directed grant, that was me kind of, readers will get to this later in the book, I sort of made that part up. I mean, basically, here's what we call directed grant today in American politics, an earmark. It's when rather than passing legislation that leads to a competitive process, the politicians are simply saying it goes to this entity or that entity. So I guess it's called, in a modern day politics, an earmark. As opposed to some kind of grant that's competitively bid.
I'm chatting with David Pepper about his brand new novel, A Simple Choice. It is available everywhere, and if you want just a fantastic political thriller read that will entertain you for a night or two, it is just great. And David, I had to chuckle. I don't write in books that I get because I respect them too much, but I put a sticky note on the front of this book, and I wrote down page 215 because there's just an aside. I guess if this was a court opinion, it would be called dicta, but there was an aside in there where one of the characters goes to a rest area and notices that there's a picture of the governor and lieutenant governor hanging there, and those two folks had only been in office for a matter of weeks or months or whatever it is. You wax poetic in there as the narrator about how everything runs so slow in government, but when it comes to something to popularize a candidate who's now in office, they get those pictures hung up right away. That's got to be something that's swelled inside you for years.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that. I probably did that. So in my book, it's the character is at a rest stop of a highway. And by the way, I drive all over Ohio all the time, so I admit them too. And she looks up and she's laughing because, oh my gosh, they've already got, the new governor already has his photo up on the wall. And yeah, I do think, I mean, I see that myself. Or you see, like, you know, the local auditor has their sticker up so fast. And it is, yeah, so clearly that was been building up inside. And as you're saying, I use my books to get at a lot of sort of political truth. And I do, you know, yeah, here we have all over the country, you know, roads that aren't paved and potholes and issues and things are super slow. And then all of a sudden when it comes to a politician getting their name out there, they'll update that sign on January 1st of their new year to make sure their name is everywhere it needs to be. So, yeah, that's funny.
Meanwhile, we wait in line at the DMV.
Yeah, exactly. But by the way, when you're in that line, the newly updated names of the political people will be there, will be done right away.
Something else that came out of your book.
Yeah. And by the way, just, you know, like, I was in politics. People love when their names are on stuff. And by the way, the names also seem to be bigger and bigger every year of the, you know, you walk into a BMV or a Secretary of State's office and the name of the politician is bigger than any print in the entire room.
Well, I mean, and also, and I've noticed this even in our little county in Iowa, the local politicians put their names on the envelope, like the treasurer or the sheriff. Meanwhile, you ask 10 random people in a grocery store, 8 of them probably couldn't tell you the name of either of those two elected officials, but they've got their names on the envelopes when anything goes out, because that's just free advertising for their names, because that's how people are at the local level are elected, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really, and because they're largely unknown, that really matters. I mean, it's like you're getting your name everywhere. And, you know, even if you, in my county in Cincinnati, you write your bill every month, your tax bill to the treasurer. Well, the fact that you're writing that treasurer's name over and over again means that he's a little better known. So in offices that aren't as well known, that ends up mattering. And so they really care about it. So yeah, that's funny.
There was another thing that I'd never heard of, but it turns out it's not a real big secret or anything. Part of this book takes place at a place called the Courses at Andrews, a 36-hole golf course, essentially two courses, at Andrews Air Force Base in Washington. Can you kind of explain what that is? Because I'd never heard of it, and I actually Googled it because I'm a golfer, and I found it very interesting.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't know about it either. That was a lot of things I know about in advance, but I wanted a good scene near Washington. And it turns out that where we have Andrews Air Force Base, which is famous for housing President's plane, there's just an immense and very nice golf course that is a government golf course. It's played on by people in Washington. So my character is sort of amazed. What would people back home know if they knew that their tax dollars were paying for this really massive, nice golf course? So, but yeah, it's one other, and there's a pretty dramatic scene that happens there. And my reporter drives up and figures out how to get on the golf course to confront somebody. But yeah, it's just, I didn't know about it either. My guess is that people locally do, but it's, I'm always trying to, you know, one of the things about my books is most spy and thriller books seem to take place in, you know, D.C. and New York or London or something. And I'm always trying to come up with new places. And that's why I love being in Pemaquid Point or in Maine. I love being in Mansfield, Ohio. And if I'm going to be in D.C., I didn't want to be just on the Capitol Mall. I chose the Andrews Air Force Base golf course. So I'm always trying to come up with new places that are authentic. And frankly, we're a lot more Americans, with that being exception, but we're a lot more Americans might spend their lives than the fanciest places in their country.
Well, this book was it was a fantastic thriller. It's called A Simple Choice. It's the new one from David Pepper. And if you haven't read any of his previous books, get on his website, davidpepper.com. Go to Amazon and check it out. David, I love this book. It was so entertaining, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Thanks so much. Take care. Talk soon.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. You can go your own way.